I'm Kerry Adams, and you're listening to Kerry's Connoisseurs, coming to you from Solid Gold Podcasts. Here we talk to the movers and shakers, the drinkers, the dreamers, and all the people who make it happen in the liquor and luxury industries from around the world. Well, hello, everybody. What is the date today, even? I don't even know. I think it's the 5th of September. And I've got Tim Atkin with me. Tim, hi. Welcome.
Thank you, Kerry. It's wonderful to be back on the show. I always have fun with you.
I'm so excited because we had such fun the last time and such a lovely response to our podcast that we did the last time. And for anybody who doesn't remember who Tim is sort of, he's MW, which stands for Wine Master. I know it's the wrong way around. It should be Master of Wine, but that's the Brits for you. He's a Master of Wine from England who is in charge of us in South Africa. We think of him as our Wine Master guiding light. And Tim produces an annual report on his take on South Africa and where we're at with our wine industry. And I think I'm correct in saying that this is your 12th annual report on South Africa, Tim.
It's number 12, and it's the biggest yet at 332 pages and 110,000 words. It's not War and Peace, but it's, you know, it's the first half of War and Peace.
It's big, and it makes for fantastic reading. Before we even get off that subject, how does anybody gain access to your report, Tim, if they want to? They can buy it, can't they?
They can buy it for £20, which is, I don't know, what's that in Rand these days? About 450
about 2 million Rand, I think.
Website. Yeah, my website is timatkin.com, and it's under reports. They'll see it on the front page, and they click on the download. It's a digital download, and it goes straight into your inbox.
Okay, fabulous. Tim, just a sort of a wrap-up, your loyalty and love of the South African wine industry really does shine through. It gets comfier and comfier with every year, and I think as you grow comfier and comfier with the vineyards that you visit and the winemakers that you interact with, give us a little breakdown of how you start to compile this report, because almost 400 pages of report is quite a colossus. When did you start with this one?
Well, I started the research, as I always do, in March. I come here for the second half of March. I'm here about 12 days. And then I come back again in June, not for the weather, although the weather this year was very nice, so that I can see the new vintage. And I spend about just over 3 weeks here then. So all told, I'm here for, you know, 4.5 weeks, really. I start the writing process in sort of early July, and I finish it at the end of August. I finished the last words almost on last Saturday, so just before I flew. So it's a couple of months writing it. And a month researching it. So, you know, it's 3 months of my life. So it's a big chunk
of your life. And when you consider that, I think we've got just over 500 producers in South Africa. Well, I say producers, 500 wineries, I would say. And then I don't know how many cooperatives we still have that are up and running that I term producers. How many wines did you actually assess this year for this report?
2,259.
Ina, that's a lot of wine.
That's a little bit.
How do you select it?
It's an open door. Anybody can put their wines to me, so I don't pre-select. Anybody can put their wines in, and I'm happy to taste them. I can't visit everybody. I mean, I think this year I tasted wines from about 425 different cellars. I visited a lot of them, sometimes in groups, you know, that I go and see. I go to Parle and I might taste 8 people together. They all get a little time slot. But a lot of the time on the road, you know, driving from the West Coast, you know, right down to Agulhas, really. I don't get much further east than that, but a lot of time.
Does anybody send you wine to England and let you taste it and assess it there? Because if I was a wine producer, I would do that so that you've got the comfort of your own home to taste
wine. I did get a few, and I did a few Zoom calls with people who'd missed the tastings because they were away. I mean, ideally, I like to do the tasting in South Africa and then do the writing when I'm back in England. It's just part of the thought process. But I don't
Yes.
mind if I had to taste things in England, and I did do that. It means I can, as you said, chill the wines down. I can do a Zoom call. I've got my own glasses. I mean,
Yes.
it's a nice, comfortable spot, really, to do it.
So, is there anybody that you specifically target and say and phone them up or mail them and say, I want to taste your wines? Or is this all voluntary? Is this all the winemakers coming to you and saying, please come and taste?
It's all voluntary, but it's organised by Wines of South Africa, who do a fantastic job setting up my programme. So they deal with the people shouting at them and saying, "We haven't had a visit for 3 years. Why do I have to put my wine into a tasting somewhere?" So they take that stress out of my life, which is great. I mean, I do sometimes say, "Hey, I've not been to X for a while. I'd really like to include them with a visit in the programme." But the logistical side of it is done by them, and I have a wonderful driver, Ronnie, who I've had for years, who drives me everywhere, and he's kind of part of my support team as well. It's very important, I think, to have support teams in life, don't you think?
Yeah, you definitely do have to have. So they set up all the tastings and things and the times and the what have yous. For the 12th report, I know there's lots of overlap, and I know that you do spend a lot of time in the Swartland, and I know that you sort of specialize in the Swartland, and they feature very, very big time in your report. Was there anything different this year from previous years?
Yeah, I mean, the Swartland doesn't feature, I mean, it does, a lot of the top wines feature in the report, but I don't spend more time there than I do anywhere else. I mean, all told, I'm probably only in the Swartland for 2 or 3 days out of that month and a bit. But the wines do well, you're right. I mean, the Swartland doesn't maybe have as many new producers as some other areas. I think the Swartland has a comparatively narrow band of producers at the top, maybe 10 or 12 producers. And then after that, there's maybe not, it's not quite as deep. As say Stellenbosch, and Stellenbosch I think has more strength in numbers and strength in depth. So I would spend much more time in Stellenbosch than I do in the Swartland. I mean, the perception may be that a Swartland is more my kind of thing, but that's not true. You know, I think that, I mean, I really value what they're doing in the Swartland, sorry, but also in Stellenbosch too. I think Stellenbosch would be the main focus of the report.
Well, it's interesting you say that because I agree with you. I think what the Swartland's done for the South African wine industry is to sort of shout from the rooftops a bit because it is, oh, excuse me, it is our newest, most exciting region for a long time. We'll put it that way. And the boys in the Swartland are cute and they're revolutionary and they're sort of wine warriors and, eco warriors and they're all of the above and it's fun. But if you're looking for wine royalty, for me, Stellenbosch has to be wine royalty. It remains that for me from a terroir perspective, really. None of the wines that I looked at on the sort of front page that say best this, best that, best blah, none of them are from Stellenbosch, I don't think. Maybe a rosé from Stellenbosch.
I'd have to think off the top of my head, actually. Well, that's not true, because the red wine, the white wine of the year, and the only wine to
Oh,
get
well,
100 points is from Stellenbosch.
oh, and I think didn't Etienne La Riche do extremely well as well? And he's still in Bosch, isn't he?
He did well last year. He was my legend last year. But the white wine of the year, which is Chris Alheit's Nautical Dawn, is from the Rustenhof farm, which is in coastal
Is
Stellenbosch, really,
it?
basically that,
I didn't
yeah, sort
realize
of
that it was from Stellenbosch.
Aura, Wraithby, you know, Fir Grove, that
Yeah.
kind of area there, which is on the Sinai Hill, so the back of Mielas, really,
Yes.
on that granite facing
Yes.
Thulse Bay. So the only wine to get 100 points was Stellenbosch. So let's hear it for Stellenbosch.
Okay,
And you
absolutely.
know,
I'm so pleased to
lots of
hear
wine
that
that's
because
developed.
I
Yeah, I
know
mean,
you can't.
98 points is no, it's at
It's
98 points
amazing.
is Rabelais. Rabelais did very well. That Canoncourt Black Label did very well. There were plenty of Stellenbosch wines in there.
Don't you love that Rabelais wine? I mean, it's just one of my fave things ever.
Underrated. Yeah.
Completely underrated, but that's Giles Webb for you. We don't want to inflate his ego too much because he could be impossible, So we won't do that. He is a gorgeous boy and he does produce unbelievable wine, and that Rabelais is an unsung hero for me of the Stellenbosch wine industry. So I know that people want to know, in short, they want a summary from you, which is a bit of a cheat because we're not going to tell them. They have to buy your report. Did you have a big all-time favorite, regardless of points or anything? Was there anything that had the charisma and the personality and the whatever that made you think, oh my God, I want to buy 20 cases of this? Was there anything like that you tasted?
Do you know the wine that gave me the most pleasure? And it's another Stellenbosch wine. And I tasted it sighted. And then I retasted it blind in a lineup of all of the top Bordeaux-style wines from Stellenbosch. And was actually the Mielas Rubicon.
Brilliant to hear.
But the 21 Rubicon, I think, is outstanding. And it was very gratifying to see that do so well. It was an emotional moment. And there was a stage when Mielas had a bit of a disagreement with the previous winemaker when he was there, and he didn't put the wines in for a few years. And it was good to see, and I think Mielas has been back in the report for a few years now, and I think the quality has improved dramatically under Wim Treutter.
Who's making the wine at Mielas at the moment? Who's making the wine there?
Wim Treutter.
Yeah, okay. I'm so pleased to hear that because Hannes is just one of those people that we need to keep alive forever. And who can't remember a gorgeous kitchen lunch, dinner, whatever at Mielas with Hannes and dogs and cats,
I think,
and whatever
he's
else.
After himself.
Yeah, he's gorgeous, and it has to be one of our iconic wines in South Africa. It really, really does have to be. So that's really, really good to hear. And he also never went completely ballistic and berserk with price. So you can buy a Mielas Rubicon and feel really, really spoilt and posh. And it's, I don't know, what, 400 Rand a bottle or something? It's not like some of the 2,000 and 3,000 Rand a bottles.
I think it's 550. And a lot of the wines peer group would be 2,000. I mean, not Rabelais, but, you know, if you look at Villafonte C or Fecherlik and V, those would be 2,000 Rand bottles, really.
Yes.
So it was great to, as I said, I think.
Okay, goody. So you loved, and what vintage is that, Mielas? Did you say 2021?
Yeah, and 2021 is a really, 2021 is a very good vintage, both for whites and reds. So I think if some people want to take something away from the podcast, it's that 21 is a very good vintage all round. I think the best vintage.
That's
in South
exactly
Africa.
What I was going to ask you, because I remember when we spoke last time, you and I both said we chatted around the 2015, which was hailed as, you know, the Holy Grail. I'm not sure that it was. There were some absolutely brilliant wines from 2015, but I've subsequently tasted some of them that are starting to sort of topple over a little bit in the bottle. 2017 was another really, really, really good vintage. And then I was going to say to you, of the wines that you've been tasting for the 12th report, you must have been tasting 21, 22, 23, I would have imagined.
Yeah,
and so, which was your favorite? So you're saying 21 is a cracker.
I would say 21 for both reds and whites. 2022, those of you who live in the country will remember that it was pretty hot in January. You had those heat spikes. And 2022 is a bit more mixed. I think the reds are quite plush. But some of them are very good. 23 was wet, particularly in March. So a lot of the late season varieties in Stellenbosch were hit by rains. And some of the top producers didn't make top red wines in 23. But the whites are very good. So I think that 23 whites I would buy with confidence. And that includes my white wine of the year that we've already mentioned. 21, I think, for both reds and whites. And it was a cooler vintage, which is a bit of an anomaly these days because vintages, generally speaking, are getting warmer, and we all see that around us with climate change. But 21 was a cooler, later vintage and quite elegant, I think, by Cape standards. So a vintage I would certainly buy from, if you can find 21s in the marketplace. And if it's such as your thing, maybe put a few bottles away. You know, I think if you were putting some Rabelais away, 21, or the Lariche wines, the Cabernet Reserve, or something like the Mielas Rubicon that we've talked about, the top Stellenbosch Bordeaux reds, I think, are very good in 21.
Okay, well, that's good to know. So they best sort of put that in. Your assessment of the South African wine industry sort of as at today, Are you seeing great leaps and strides to excellence? Is it sort of treading water? Are we experiencing a lot of difficulty with the terrible weather conditions in the Cape? I mean, we really have had quite extra weather conditions. And I don't believe in massive global warming and all of that stuff. I know that it's very unpopular and it's very non-politically correct and all that. But it's a cyclical thing on planet Earth, and about which humans can do very little, I think. And the Western Cape honestly is, well, most of it is a little peninsula that sort of sticks out into the bottom of the world heading towards the South Pole. It's asking to be damaged and battered and bruised by weather patterns. Mm. Is the weather taking its toll on the wine industry in the Cape?
Yeah, it is. And I'm sorry to disagree with you, but I would disagree with you about climate change. I think climate change is very real. And if you talk to Professor Stephanie Midgley, who's the, you know, the Cape's leading expert on climate change, then basically the Cape is hotting up, you know, ocean temperatures are getting warmer. And I think what we're seeing is, generally speaking, warmer temperatures, but we're also seeing more extreme weather events. And I think you're right about that. The three, you know, biggest amounts of rainfall that the Cape has experienced, I think, in the last 150 years have happened in the last 15, 16 months. So I think there's more rain, it's more concentrated. That's one of the elephants in the room. I think price is another one, that South African wine is still sold too cheaply. And it's difficult. We're both consumer advocates and we like telling people that it's a bargain, you can buy these wines. But for the long-term sustainability of the industry, and that's for investing in people and in vineyards and in sustainability, both human and agricultural, I think that the prices need to go up. But from a positive point of view, I've never felt more positive about the quality of the wines in this country. I've never felt more positive in the time I've been writing about it, which is, I first came here in 1990, about the politics of the country and about the wine industry itself. I think the South Africa is producing the best wines in its history. I feel very positive about the way the country is going. You know, I think that there's an energy about South Africa which is, you know, personified by its rugby team in lots of ways, its inclusivity.
How
its
brilliant
success.
Was that rugby? You were here for that match last weekend. Where did you watch it?
I watched it where in England. I was cheering you on.
I thought you were here already. Where did you get to, Tim Tim?
I got here on Sunday, so I watched the game and then went to the airport. And as you will know, many of you will know, my wife is South African, so my wife wouldn't let me to see anybody else when they're playing the All Blacks.
Uh-huh. Okay, so that rugby was absolutely amazing. But rugby has forever been the biggest unifier of South Africa. Secondly, I agree with you. I think we've got a government of national unity, which is terribly grown up and way beyond most of our expectations. And I do hope that it's going to work. So that's good. Thirdly, I was recently in Mexico. I missed you, actually. I wished you'd been there tasting with us. I was there for Congo's Mondial, and we tasted an enormous... Yeah, I loved Mexico. I absolutely loved it. It's huge, massive fun. It's like Cape Town on steroids, you know? And the very, very apparent thing for me is, if I were asked to cite three regions in the world who I felt were producing some of the best wine in the world or on the up and up, it's most definitely Portugal, Spain, and South Africa. Those wines shone bright in that constellation. They really, really did. For the rest, a lot of foofy, dirty, stinky, unhealthy, unhygienic stuff in amongst some very stellar stuff, but South Africa and Spain and Portugal, just extraordinary wines. So I'm excited about the sort of quality of South African wine as well. It, for me, it's gathering impetus annually. I really do believe that.
I agree. I think quality and diversity, basically.
Yeah. The cultivars or the grape varieties that you like best, what should everybody be watching for?
I think Chenin is king or queen, whatever you want to call it. I think Syrah is fantastic. I think your white blends are undervalued, and particularly so-called Mediterranean white blends, which includes Chenin, which isn't a Mediterranean grape, I know, but, you know, I think that includes things like Verdelho and Marsanne and Roussanne and Grenache Blanc. Vermentino, Picpoul, you know, a little bit of Colombard sometimes. I think all of those things are very exciting. Bordeaux blends and Cabernets from Stellenbosch. The Pinots are getting better and better. The Chardonnays are getting better and better.
Okay.
The Sauvignons are getting better and better. The Fizzes, more MCCs or CCs as they're now known, Cap Classique, than ever in the report and getting over 95 points. It's a very exciting time to be buying wine in South Africa and from South Africa. There has never been a better time to buy wine from this country.
There you are, guys. I mean, you can't say it better than that, and coming from somebody better than Timothy, but let's do a quick little run through through some of the results. Winemaker of the Year, Cali Lowe from Porceleinbach. That's, of course, a Shiraz, isn't it, that he
it
makes
is.
That everybody fights and scratches each other's eyes out for. Nice.
Yes, it is.
I haven't tasted the latest vintage.
It got 99 points for me. It is a Swartland wine, as you said, and it's from a particular site. It's a single vineyard wine of incredible sort of blue shape. It's schist, really. It's sort of schist and slate. It's a remarkable site. And Rosa Kruger calls it a brutal site, and it is a bit brutal in that it faces north, so it's a hot site. It produces wines with quite high pH, but the pH is balanced really by the fact that Cali uses whole bunches. That means he throws everything in so that the stems are there, and the stems give you a sort of extra impression of spiciness and of tannin and of structure to the wine. So what it lacks in acidity, it has in structure really from the stems and from the place.
He doesn't make an awful lot of it either, does he? I mean, it's in quite short supply, that Porceleinberg.
Yeah, no, it's not so bad. It's not like some of the wines in the Swartland that are, you know, made from 1 hectare or something. But Porceleinberg is a comparatively big site now, but a lot of that goes into Buch and Hüsklub Syrah, because they're the owners, Vinimark, and also into the chocolate block. So a lot of the chocolate block, the base of the chocolate block blend, comes from Porceleinberg. So anybody who can't afford Porceleinberg, buy the chocolate block, because the base of the chocolate block is from that site.
I was in England recently, also just a few weeks ago, visiting Jonathan, my son, and I was completely amazed all over again at the success of the chocolate block. I kept on telling myself that it was the name, and that Reg Lascaris, being sort of the marketing guru that he is, just shot the lights out with the marketing. But it's actually very drinkable, that wine. It's extremely drinkable.
It's a fantastic
wine.
They're
making billions of bottles.
You could argue it's the most successful brand in the South African wine industry, you know, in monetary
100%.
Terms. It sells at good prices. As you said, there's north of 1 million bottles of it made every year. And people want to buy it.
I know. And it makes you, it's one of those, it does stick its hands up and say, buy me, buy me. I mean, the chocolate block, you can just imagine what it must be tasting like, hey?
Exactly.
You just want one.
Exactly.
You just want one of those. Tim, young winemaker Stephanie Veit, is that any relation to Ronel Veit?
I don't
know. You know, Ronel's the winemaker at Bartini. And she used to be the winemaker at Boschendal. She used to make the red wine. And I wonder if there's a Veit. It's quite an unusual surname. But
Veit is an unusual name, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a bit.
Yeah.
So Stephanie Veit, but Thistle and Weed, lovely wine.
Yeah.
So she was a young winemaker. Viticulturalist from Bosman Family Wines. I love those Bosman Family Wines. They're also unsung heroes. Not many people know about Bosman Family Wines, and they really, really are smart. They're smart wines. We like that.
Well, it's not just the wines. Bosman sell a lot of plant material, you know, that they grow vines. So I think a third of the vines that are planted in the Cape come from Bosman. They're doing a lot of research and development work into things like leaf roll virus. They're planting new varieties that they think may be drought and or heat resistant, with climate change in mind. You know, they're doing a lot of work, but also the great thing about them is the business itself, in that 26% of the business is owned by their workers, and has been, I think, since about 1999 or something like that. So it's the biggest transformation, or the most, I think, the most visible transformation project in the winelands. And, you know, I think it's great, you know, and they reinvest. I think there are about 450, 500 workers, you know, community of 3,000 people who all benefit from this very successful business, not wine business, but viticultural business, and it's reinvested back into the community in creches, in schooling, and you know they're now getting to the point where they've got their first university graduates, and I think it's a lovely virtuous circle and a good news for the industry and for South Africa.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's a goodie. I'm with you on Bosman. I think that's great. Producer seller of the year. What does that mean?
We used to call them cooperatives, and they changed their names. And some of them like being called cooperatives, and some of them hate being called cooperatives, and say we're not a cooperative, we're a producer seller. But a producer seller is a cooperative, and in other words, they often have, you know, 40, 50, could be 200 members who bring grapes to a central point, and then the wines are made there and marketed from there. And I think Pedderburg Wines, who won this year, have done a great job of taking their old vine material, particularly old vine Chenin Blanc, out of bigger blends and making them as old vine project wines. And I thought their wines were consistently good. Their top wines were extremely good. I thought they were very well priced. And I think it's a very well-run co-op, or if you prefer, producer-seller.
You and I chatted about cooperatives extensively. I love cooperatives. I think they should be encouraged. I think we should have more. I think it was a brilliant plan of the previous regimes to have cooperatives in every agricultural sector, quite frankly, because it ensures success for growers, big and small, whether you can afford your own cellar or not. It's brilliant. It's a bit communist in its approach, but I love it. And I think that we should really, really continue. So that's a goodie. So that's what a producer seller. Okay, I got you. Winemaking legend, Gunter Brosel. I was so chuffed when I read that because he really was just everybody's granddaddy, wasn't he?
Yeah, it was lovely. He gave a long speech at his acceptance, but he was very chuffed, and the room was chuffed. And I feel a bit bad, and I probably should have given him the award a few years ago, but I'd slightly forgotten about him. And Carl Schultz at Hartenberg said to me, our first rock star winemaker was Gunter Brosel. He said Gunter Brosel was our first internationally acclaimed winemaker, you know, pre Beyers and pre Jan Boland and pre André van Rensburg. It was Gunter Brosel. And so I thought, 100%. You know, he's still very lucid. He spoke very, very convincingly and eloquently. Yeah, he was great. He's 90, but he's a good 90. I mean, I hope I get to 90 and look like that, you know, sound like
we
that.
We will. Well. We're preserving ourselves in Cabernet. You'll see. We'll be fine. He is
we'll still
an
be doing
absolute.
Podcasts in 90.
Yeah, we will. That was a wonderful award, and thank you for giving him that, because he really is the granddaddy of wine in South Africa. Who's still alive? He's amazing. So Gunter Brosel was that. Best cellar door experience is Ernie Els. That's nice.
Yeah,
that's nice. That's Fantastic. Louis Stradom running that thing, or what?
It's Louis Stradom's running it, and the my first port of call of this, you know, round of tastings in March was at Ernie Els, and I went there, you know, for a tasting and lunch on the first day, and the sun was shining, and I thought, what an amazing place! You've got a view of the Helderberg, you've got the golf connection, you know, you can have a little chip into a hole. The Ernie stuff is done quite nicely, you know, it's sotto voce if you like. The food's great, the staff are great, the training's great. You know, I think the decor is really nice. It's not bling. It's a nice place to hang out. If you've not been there, folks,
believe,
go and sit
I
there
believe
and come
he,
down.
He doesn't come there very much anymore, I believe. I don't think he's in South Africa very much. But
I'm not sure if he even still owns it. Does he? Does he still have a shareholding? He might
do. He owns a portion of it, I think. I think Louis Stradom and a little consortium bought quite a large portion of it. I don't know. I stand corrected. But, you know, it, as you say, it has that stamp of Ernie Els, which is one of humility and under the radar, which is quite nice.
Wonderful golfer.
And the wines are kick-ass. The wines are really nice.
Yeah, I've never met him, but by all accounts, a very nice person too. Yeah, so
he is a very nice man. So we're telling everybody, if you go to the Cape, guys, go to the Ernie Els cellar, because you're going to get a good cellar door experience. Overall white, we've spoken about Nautical Dawn, Chris Olheit. Do you know what? I'm of the opinion that we make better white wine than red wine in this country. I always have been. It's just a personal preference. I think we make some absolutely amazing, and we certainly make some of the best Chenin Blanc in the world. Not that there's that many other countries that make Chenin Blanc on its own. I think it's only really the Loire. Who else is making Chenin Blanc?
Well, you find Chenin in places, bizarrely, in places like the Central Valley in California, but it's a cheap grape, really.
Is it?
But you're right in terms of quality wines. I would say the two main contenders really would be South Africa and the Loire Valley.
But Tim, let's be honest, it's a cheap grape here as well. It's got the highest yields of all white wines. It's the biggest plant in Loire.
Yeah.
We make brandy out of it. That, you know, it makes. You can plant one vine of Chenin Blanc and one vine of something more parsimonious, Chardonnay, and you're going to get 200 bottles of Chenin and two bottles of Chardonnay. I mean, it's a no-brainer. It is a cheap grape. It's a poor man's grape.
I think it depends where it's planted. I mean, if you've got an old vine block that's dry farmed on the Paardenberg in Stellenbosch, you know, you might be lucky to get, you know, a ton, a hectare out of it. So it can be very low yielding, but I take your point.
Tim, it's the same with all of us. As we get older, you get less out of us as we get older. There's nothing you can do about it.
We hope better. We hope it's a bit better. No, but I think to finish, I think the reason it was planted everywhere is, as you said, it was reliable and it yielded well, you know, and lots of yield for brandy base. I mean, you know, the reason Chenin was planted so much under the old system that was run by the KWV was because of that. They told people to plant Chenin everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank God they did, because it's really sort of, it's stepping up to the plate as one of our signature grapes in South Africa, I think. We really do handle it quite nicely. Tim, then we can go through all of those things. What I think everybody would love to know about, because your best value. What were your best values? Secateurs Chenin. That's nice for Adi Badenhorst. The best value for money, white wine. It's an amazing little brand, that, isn't it? Well, big brand.
Very clever brand. Yeah, and I think Adi Badenhorst is unusual in that he makes brilliant cheap wines, but also really some top wines as well. And funnily enough, the red value wine of the year was the Molyneux Kloof Street Red.
Kloof Street.
And the Molyneux obviously makes some of the most expensive red wines in particular in this country. But the Kloof Street Red is your chance to get a bit of Andrea and Chris Molyneux magic.
I know, that's price. Perfect. It's very nice.
Yeah.
That was good. So we've got best value white guys as Secateurs from Adi Badenhorst, and best value red is the Kloof Street Red, which is, it's a Shiraz-based thing, isn't it? Is it a blend, or is it all Shiraz?
Yes, it's a blend. It has things like Tinta Barocca in it, a bit of Cinsault. It's got other bits and pieces, but as you said, it's Shiraz-based or Syrah-based with other things from the Swartland.
Yeah, no, it's yummy. And, of course, you can't really go wrong with the Molyneux. Everything they touch turns to drinkable. It's just gorgeous, you know. Best value rosé, Noble Hill. That's nice. He's a nice guy. He's doing great things.
Very nice. Yeah. 2 years running. Yeah.
2 years running. Sparkling, Pongratz.
Yeah,
again,
that's surprising.
I mean, that was the Distel seller, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was really good. So that's Heineken Beverages, you know, and that was outstanding. I think it's 190 rand, so it's not cheap, but I thought it was a Blanc de Blanc made from a combination. I think it's 90% Chardonnay and 10% Chenin. I just thought that was a really smart wine with nice autolysis. And autolysis is those nutty, toasty characters you get in sparkling wine.
And you know it is. And if you look at it, it has been consistent. That Pongratz, you know, nobody likes to admit it, but it really is the go-to celebration bubbly when you're having a wedding or a 21st or a this or that. It's always available and it's always nice. Its consistency is its big plus for me. Best sweet wine, Van Leeuwen. Those boys, those are those cousins, aren't they?
Yeah, good. You know, and they've now got holdings, obviously, in Stellenbosch as well. That's a very successful brand. They're very good at giving consumers what they want. And that wine's got, you know, I like the residual sugar is really nicely done. You know, we forget at our peril that people actually like sugar sometimes in wine. A little bit of sweetness.
People,
you know, some
South
of the best
Africans love sugar.
They do. You know, they do.
Who doesn't love sugar? Like I've always said, you're not going to eat that green pawpaw. I don't want a green pawpaw. I want an orange one, you know. We don't want to eat green, and we don't want to drink green either. We want to drink nice, juicy, sweet, supple stuff. Well, I thought I saw Van der Constance. Oh, I did. Sweet one. Van der Constance.
Yeah.
Has to be.
Yeah. Mm? Brilliant.
That's and just
2021
like
a vintage. Yeah. 2021 yeah. vintage again coming up trumps, you know, acidity, freshness. The years yeah. when I like Van der Constance most is when it's a year with higher acidity and more freshness. And 2021
Me
was
too.
It's outstanding. Yeah.
It is extraordinary. But, you know, the other day I was somewhere. I can't remember who I was with. I love sticky wine. I absolutely love well-made sticky wines. And I don't know, I might have been with Fridge. I might have been with Michael Fridge on. I can't remember. And we opened a bottle of Niederberg Edelkir.
Made by Gunter Brösel.
Made by Gunter Brösel. That's what it means.
Yeah.
I tell you that I think I paid something stupid like 200 and something rand for that bottle of wine. It is so exquisite and so gorgeous. Anybody who doesn't like wine and who wants to teach themselves how to drink wine, just go and buy some of that stuff. Buy Clan Constantia Van der Constance. But I wonder how many stickies we've got in the country. Maybe about 200?
Yeah, and they did very well again this year. The best ones are really good.
Oh, they're just gorgeous. And especially when you think about how hard it is to make them. It's literally, talk about blood out of a stone. That's what it is. It's hard to make.
It is.
And they are just gorgeous. Your sparkling that you loved best was Cuvée Clive. I tasted one of those last night at that dinner at Marble. So nice. Really, really smart wine. And they were showing me that wine. Pierre was actually saying that he'd been with you. That sparkling that they've bottled with the funny cork that they put a sort of
a
hasp or a staple on.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
tell us about it. Why would you do that?
I think it's just they think that the wine ages differently. So they have two wines called Yin and Yang. And one they have under a cork, which is a normal cork, and this is an agraff. And as you said, it is a cork, but it's sort of stapled onto the top of the bottle, really.
I just don't understand what difference the staple would make. I didn't want to make too much of an issue of it last night.
Yeah, the wine definitely ages differently, and I don't know enough about the microbiology of it to know why, if that's the correct word, why it ages in that way. But they're very different. It's worth trying the yin and the yang.
They were incredibly different. We're going to have to look that up, and we're going to have to tell everybody the onus is on us. I cannot for the life of me work out what difference a staple or a hasp or whatever on top of that cork would make to the aging. But it did, and it was very nice. So Cuvée Clive, guys, it's extremely expensive and smart, and I think it ages on the knees for 6 or 7 years or something. It's absolutely gorgeous. But that's the sparkling wine that Tim chose for us. Oh, and then, of course, we can't be in South Africa without talking about port, which we're not allowed to call it, but we do make nice port. And you chose KWV's Tawny. We want to die with that in a drip in our body.
Yeah, that was the best value. Yeah, an amazing wine. Probably the best value fortified in the world, I would say, because they've got tremendous old stock. These wines are very good.
If I was to say to you, what's the best port in South Africa? Where is that? I'm looking for the category here.
Yeah, the one that won was the 2022 Beauplas Cape Vintage. So very young at the moment. It's certainly something, a vintage style wine that you could lay down for at least another decade, probably 2-3 decades, actually.
Yes. And then just a couple off the top. I mean, I love Grenache Blanc. I don't know if anybody else. I think it's becoming quite an important category in South Africa. You chose Donovan Rawls Grenache Blanc as one of your top Grenache Blancs. You, Sauvignon Blanc Batu XDN, you loved that, 2023. If I were to say to you, give the viewers a red, a white, and a rosé, I mean, we know what your, they must get your report and see what your points are.
They should.
But if I said to you, just now for today, red, white, rosé, which are your besties for today?
Well, I think the ones I gave the awards to, really. I mean, if I were giving one bit of advice to people if they're buying the report, is to look at the, because I publish the prices in Rand in the back for every single wine, is to find yes. the wines high scores and low prices. So, you know, there are some wines in there that have got 95 points that are under 200 Rand. Is look out for those, really. I don't have the report to hand, but I think that would be my tip. I mean, I think you'd be hard pushed to go wrong with the wines we've mentioned today. If you want a really good bottle, value bottle of white wine, the Secateurs is great. The red, Kloof Street, you know, the rosé, maybe something, as I said, a little bit like that Noble Hill, Mourvèdre rosé. Go with those. I mean, unless you want to buy something more expensive. But the sweet spot, I think, for wine in South Africa, and it's where it outshines the rest of the world, is between 150 and 300 Rand. So if you've got between 150
and 300
Rand in your pocket, you're going to do better from this country than possibly anywhere in the world. Maybe Spain, as you talked about Spain earlier, and Portugal. Mm. And I think those are very good tips too. They're also countries that are undervalued. You know, if you've got that 150, 300 Rand, in your pocket or on your credit card, then those are the places to look at.
And Tim, there was one other thing I wanted to ask you. Gosh, it's gone out of my head entirely. Gone. I'll have to think about that. I did wait for a phone call to see if I should book that DNA test for us.
Yes, we should do it. I want to do it.
We should have, but now it's going to have to be next year because you've left it too late again. You're only here for another day or two.
Hmm? Well, don't tick the box that says you want to hear from people who share your DNA, because a friend of mine did it and she got a bit of a surprise. She found out that her biological father was not her biological father. It was their parents' best friend.
A bit awkward.
She's now dead.
Did she tell her mother?
Yeah, her mother still alive. Well, her mother knew, but she had it out with her mother and said, "Why didn't you tell me?" She said, "Oh, I wanted to, darling, but I didn't know how to tell you." So both of her fathers are biological.
Well, it could have been worse. She could have said, "I didn't know." I mean, that would have been even worse if you didn't know.
Even worse. You know, we're laughing, but it's pretty tragic, isn't it? So anyway, we're going to tick the box that says, do not contact me if you share my DNA.
Don't tell anybody. Don't tell anybody. Tim, your report is comprehensive. It's fun. It's gorgeous. It deals with everything. It deals with your views on South Africa and soil types and soil health and all the things that anybody who is interested in our wine industry should know about. Thank you so much for spoiling us with your time. It's a huge treat for us to have a you in our industry. And I love that you spoke to me. Thank you. I know you're busy. And so until this time next year, but honestly, phone me when you do that DNA test. We really are. I've got nice things for us to drink. We can commiserate over the results. That's
you suddenly find
from
that
all of us.
You suddenly find that you're two-thirds German or something. You didn't know.
Oh, no, we said that last time. It could be even worse than German. You and I are going to be clapped in irons for being politically incorrect. We'll discuss which could be the worst genealogy.
Yeah.
We'll discuss it, but I don't know.
Yeah, possibly Australian.
Oh, my goodness. Or New Zealand.
Oh, yeah.
It's even more woke. Tim, thank you so much. We love you. Right. You are our hero. And thank you. Thank you
See
for
you
what
soon.
You do. Goodbye.
Okay. Bye.
Cheers.